Man, after a week off, we are back this weekend on Nevada Backcountry. Coming up in the show, we'll have a special guest, Rick Carter. You mentioned Rick Carter's name and people give you that nod. He is a phenomenal, nationally ranked shotgun shooter. Works right here at Evans Broadcast.
And you didn't even know it.
No, I didn't. I always, you know, he and I would kind of talk about shotguns from time to time. We'll have him giving us some pointers, talking a little bit about sporting clays, a couple other shotgun games he does. Let's kind of do a quick recap, Dave, of Sheep Show 2024.
It was quite a bit larger.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like they opened up two more large rooms for more vendors, and it took a long time. I don't even think I got through the whole thing. The wife and I, when we went down there and checked it all out, I don't think we got through the whole thing. I mean, it was awesome. And then that kids section, the kid experience. I've been fortunate enough to get able to work that the last several years, seven years. You brought your little ones down there.
Yep.
You tried to wear them out, but I think it reversed on you.
Oh, it did.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, from working the show one day and then going back with the family, and like you, I don't think we covered everything.
No.
But mine's more, I get that. It's like a deep, dark depression that sets in after the 50th hunt I know I will never be able to afford.
That was the tough part, was seeing all these cool hunts, just knowing that, you know, you walk
in. It's just not in the cards
for me, buddy.
You're just
like, yeah, not my tax bracket, man. That's not going to work, you know. But
I love those, like the Argali, the Marco Polo stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, the Ibex.
These things, they got like a 60-inch spread, big corkscrew horns. You hunt them at like 19, 20,000 feet.
It's cool to talk to the folks. I mean, there were people there from all over the world.
And out of morbid curiosity, I'm always like, how will these hunts run?
What do they start at?
And some of those are like $200,000.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going, yeah, that ain't happening.
Huh.
Even I know a couple years ago, I got a wild hare and thought, you know what? Bucket list. Someday I'd like to kill a stone sheep. Entry level is $55,000.
Yeah.
And I just went, well, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Exactly. You know, can I get a 3D target of one? I'll shoot
exactly.
that a bunch. But
yeah,
some of those hunts were just mind boggling. There was one guide service there, or vendor there, that had a show special for, I think it was like Montana mule deer. Show special for a guided Montana mule deer, 12.5.
Oh,
I was
for
like,
a mule deer.
Dang.
Part of it is just, I wish I could partake in some of that stuff.
Yeah.
I would like to, at some point in my life, do those hunts where it's like you get a chocolate mint on your pillow at night.
Dude, wouldn't that be sweet?
Not just like a patch of dirt and a tarp, but.
Right. Or you harvest your animal and they have like a professional chef cook it for you that night.
Yes, that would be cool.
With a fantastic drink.
Okay, so full disclosure, I have done an African hunt, and that was, I didn't get a chocolate on my pillow at night, but yeah, man, 12.5 for a mule deer, holy moly, I could go do that here in the hills for a heck of a lot less. I wanted to ask you though, Dave, inaugural NASP tournament.
Yes.
How'd that go?
That went exceptionally well. We had about 200 or so local kids from the school district, and you know, from all over, from Fallon, from Douglas, Carson City. We had homeschool groups, whole bunch of different teams. They all shoot the same equipment. They all shoot the Genesis bow with the 18-12 arrows.
Right.
And they shoot at two different distances. Usually the state tournaments down in Las Vegas during the world championships down there at South Point. But this year we had the opportunity through the Wild Sheep Foundation, which donated the gargantuan room we were in for the NASP tournament, which will be an annual event now. And then there's also one being held in Elko now, so that, you know, a lot of these northern schools don't have to travel down to Las Vegas every year. That's what they've been doing for like the last 6 or 7 years.
Who took top honors?
So we don't know yet because we still have to do the Vegas one next week.
Oh, very good point. Okay.
Yeah, we have to do next week.
But what about at this shoot? I mean, obviously there's somebody.
I don't know. They did not tally that up and provide that info. But the NASP tournament went incredibly well. It was well received.
Good.
And it was good. It was a lot of fun. And then, you know, the youth experience, again, it grew grew again this year. And there were more events for kids to go to. There was 3D archery. There was the flying, the slinging machine archery. You got to shoot the foam target that's flying in the air. And BB gun shooting and all kinds of neat events, teaching you all about wildlife and habitats and kayaking and fly fishing.
Man, we came home with a bag full of stuff.
Yeah.
But everything from the Boy Scouts, which I'm going to sound out of touch, not very hip here. There were lady Boy Scouts.
Yeah, they've combined. The Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts have now combined. They did that a couple years ago.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. No joking you.
I didn't want to get like into some sort of...
some weird conversation.
So I just kept my mouth shut, but I did notice, I was like, that's a lady Boy Scout. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, they still have Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, but either can go to either one now, I think.
Oh, it's just Scouts.
I guess it's just Scouts.
So. All right. So I noticed that, but here's what I wanted to bring up. Correction to a past episode that we did talking about the Sheep Show. Okay, so I said Glacier Lake for the world record bighorn. It was Flathead Lake in Montana, which is where, and it was 48 pounds is what that thing weighs. Just the skull and horns. Yeah.
Just insane.
I went over and read the little placard about it.
Yeah, because it was a deadhead they found.
Yep,
it was a deadhead.
Flathead Lake in Montana.
Flathead Lake, Montana.
Unreal. Looks like a cartoon.
Yeah, 200, 214 or something. Every year I got to go walk up and take a look at it. I still have pictures of it on my phone. I look at it every now and then just to think.
There might be something out there in Nevada. I think I probably would have heard rumors if there was something like that wandering around.
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. Sheep hunters are pretty tight-lipped when they find something that's just a monster. Yeah. They don't say anything until there's a picture of them with it.
And then
they're like, oh, yeah, we've been watching it for 5 years.
Yeah, good point. All right, so there could be something.
Yeah.
I saw the 202. I don't know if it was a state ram, but the 202 ram from Oregon. I mean... A 170 ram looks massive to me.
Yes.
A 200-inch ram? Yeah. Ungodly big.
Yeah, it's insane. The mass that they just carry.
Yeah,
that.
Giant suckers.
Well, and then their third measurement's still 17, and you're like, my God. What was your favorite vendor?
I'm going to get called to the carpet on this one. Honestly, I enjoyed spending time with Tim Burnett.
Yeah.
So I went over there with the kids.
Yeah.
And of course, I've sent him pictures because my kids have a weird thing about clothes and shoes. So it seems like they're always barefoot. So every now and then.
They don't like wearing them?
Mm-mm.
No. Oh, okay. I thought it was the opposite. I was like, oh, great. They've been watching too many of the Kardashian episodes.
So like after that big snowstorm, I took a picture of Wyatt, my youngest son, out in the yard, barefoot and a short sleeve shirt in the snow.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So I sent that to Tim. And then one day I couldn't find my middle daughter, Alice, and she had gone down the road to deliver thank you cards to our neighbors. And here she is walking down the road. It was that real cold snap we had, maybe 15 degrees, barefoot, short sleeve shirt. So Tim and I joke about that. So he got to actually meet my kids in person.
Oh, so, now he can put a face to the crazy.
Yeah. And so, of course, one of them was Wyatt was not wearing shoes. He got a kick out of that. But yeah, man, looking at his new clothes and stuff and just I get along with him.
Yeah. And he's that new camouflage pattern that he's got
pretty
going
dang cool.
Is really cool. And not only is the pattern cool, but the clothing itself is really nice. It's high quality stuff.
Put a lot of work into it. I'll flip that question on you. What about you? What was your favorite booth?
The full curl bourbon tasting.
I noticed booth. You walked out with a bottle of bourbon.
I sure did. It was fantastic. Yeah, the one that we ended up with was an 8-year, and it was aged in sherry barrels.
Well, hey, that's the recap, we'll call it, of Sheep Show 2024. Can't wait to do it again next year. Stay tuned through the break. When we come back, we'll pull Rick Carter in the studio here, and we'll talk all things sporting clays and shotguns on Nevada Backcountry. All right. right, coming up this segment on Nevada Backcountry, we've got a special guest in studio. Rick Carter is in studio. I walk past Rick Carter's office 5 days a week.
10, 15 times a day.
And you are the production director and evening show host on one of the stations here at Evans Broadcast. Why we have not had you on the show yet, complete head scratcher.
You guys come from a hunting background, and I come from strictly a sporting clays background.
I think there's some crossover there, but that's what I wanted to get into and why I wanted to pull you in to be a guest on the show. Longtime fixture of the Northern Nevada sporting clays scene. Talk to me a little bit about your background in shotgun games.
Probably 2008-ish, 2009-ish. My realtor said, hey, we're going up to Sage Hill, and we're going to have some lunch, and when we're done, we're going to shoot trap. Oh, well, okay. I hadn't shot a shotgun since I was in high school. Did a lot of hunting in high school. Liked to go out to Fallon and shoot doves. So we went out, and I shot trap and felt it was okay.
How'd you do?
I think I scored 11 out of 25. 2 weeks after that, he says, Rick, we're going to go up to Sage Hill again, and we're going to have lunch and shoot skeet. Well, okay, I shot skeet. That was a little better. Not that I'm a person that has to have a go, 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 go kind of a game, but it just seemed to go a little bit faster and smoother, and I like the difference in the target angles.
Okay, so trap is the going straight away from you.
That's right.
Skeet is the crossing things?
A high house and a low house.
Okay.
That's right. About a month passed, and this same realtor says, we're going to go up to Sage Hill this weekend, we're going to have lunch, and then we're going to go shoot sporting clays. Well, he took me up there to that sporting clays range up, and it was all she wrote. I fell in love with the game immediately. I loved the differences of the target presentations, close stuff, far stuff, crossing, quartering, poppers.
Because that's the course, right?
That's the old course.
You drive, because we go up there, you take your UTV or golf cart and you drive the course. And
that's the one.
Yeah. That's the one,
Dave, up by the water tower.
Right, exactly.
And
I think I'm shooting that every time I go chucker hunting.
I think you are.
Yeah, because I'm generally not hitting much.
So from that point, Henry, I said, well, I'm probably going to need a shotgun. And I got into researching what gun would be right for me, and I bought a Benelli Super Sport, which is a semi-automatic. It's kind of a hot rod of semi-automatics.
Okay.
Its real intent is sporting clays games.
Gotcha.
Not so much hunting. They make far better hunting guns for that purpose.
Now, was this the same time frame, 2008, 2009?
That's right.
You just dove in head first.
I did. That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
I dove into that game head first. I bought it from Mark Foreign Strike. Bought that gun, learned how to shoot, and then I thought, well, if I'm going to take this game seriously, I should go get lessons. So I did some research online, and I found a couple out of Texas called Gil and Vicky Ash, and they run a place called OSP. Well, I found out where they would be on the West Coast. Turns out they were going to be pretty close up there by Salem, Oregon. They were going to be at a club up there. So I drove up there, spent the entire weekend shooting with other people like me, and took a weekend of lessons from them.
So talk to me about timeline, though, because that's it. So
yeah, I see what you mean.
In a matter of months, you went from not having picked up a shotgun since high school to I'm traveling to take lessons?
Yes, I would
like
say 6 months.
Salem, Oregon?
6 to 7 months, and I haven't looked back since.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me about some of your career, we'll call it, highlights.
I would not say that I'm Joe Pro Shooter, the pro from Dover, but I took it super seriously, and I'd learned, and I scoured information. So I would say in C class, I won my first event in Carson City.
Okay, the classes.
Back then, you would start in what is called D class.
Okay.
You'd begin with the D classes. Nobody's ever shot a tournament before. Let's put you guys in D class. You're all competing against yourselves.
That's Dave and I showing up with like chucker guns.
You would be in D class.
Yeah, with our pumps or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
okay.
you would be competing against your ability. That's where you have fun. You're not getting roasted by somebody who's been doing it 20, 30 years.
Okay.
A lot of experience. From there, if you win, you are moved up in a class. Now you go to the C class. You're competing against like ability shooters.
Okay.
And it keeps going up from there, D to C to B to A to double A, and then to master class where I currently reside. That's the size you can go.
Okay, so how long did it take you to go from showing up at D class to where you are now, master class?
8 years.
8 years?
Yes.
8 years and a lot of shooting?
Dave, the amount of shells that I bought, I don't even want to think about it.
You don't
I shudder.
Add up the totals?
I can't. I can't even imagine. You're buying flats of ammo instead of boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's flats, and you're buying 10, 20, 30 flats at a time.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
like half a pallet.
Yes, exactly. Dave knows what he's talking about.
All right.
So the success came pretty easily. And back then, I still have all those awards. Like C-Class, you'd win buck knives. You'd win cool crystal.
Okay.
As you get a little bit more up into the classes, it's more about money. The trophies are still there, but it's for the top 3, 4, 5 shooters. But back in the lower classes, it was all about the hardware. I loved winning all that stuff. I know you guys do competition in a whole different area of shooting, and but for shooters, it's winning a trophy of some kind or a piece of crystal or a plaque. The hardware meant more than the actual winning.
Dave's got all the buckles and,
yes,
and prize checks and whatnot. I usually got to buy a "Hey, I was here" t-shirt and go home.
That's a good comment you make about buckles, because that's a big deal amongst sporting clay shooters.
It's even in the archery world. Henry and I know several folks right now that are absolutely obsessed with winning a belt buckle this year.
There's a shoot in Garnerville at Carson Valley Clays called the FFA shoot, Future Farmers of America shoot.
Uh-huh.
It is huge. I'm talking about shooters from Nevada come out of the woodwork and they try to win that belt buckle. They want the buckle. It's the big thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh. Same in our world with the archery stuff. So, and bear with me, because some of this stuff, and I think Dave, probably you too, like go shoot sporting clays every now and then. I enjoy it. I have a good time. And then the shotgun goes away till hunting season. So a lot of this stuff I don't really understand. But when you say you were a master class shooter, was that for the just for sporting clays? Or is that like you could go to a skeet tournament and you would be a master class shooter in skeet?
That's an interesting question, because they do now have a carryover where you can bring your classification from one discipline to another. Skeet is slightly different with their classification system.
Oh, I picked a bad example then.
But sporting clays, yes, you can bring some of the progress that you've made in sporting clays over to a skeet tournament. And some guys do. They just want to keep fresh when they're not shooting sporting clays tournaments. But to be good at one or the other, you should devote yourself entirely to it. Great skeet shooters do shoot sporting clays, and vice versa. Sporting clay shooters do shoot skeet. It's hard to beat a good skeet shooter at his own game.
That makes sense.
They really know what's going on. Yeah.
And see, I think that's probably the naivete on my part, whereas I look at all shotgun stuff, my first focus with a shotgun would be hunting. So for me, it's kind of like, I'll go shoot trap, I'll go shoot five stands, sporting clays, whatever. I don't really focus on them, I'd say. To the point of like, okay, I really got to perfect this.
Henry, I use all the disciplines to practice.
Okay.
When I take a 6 to 7 week layoff in the wintertime at the holidays, I put the gun away, don't touch it, just give my brain a rest. But when I come back in January, I go right to the skeet field. The targets are close.
Right, right.
I can get my kid to pull for me. It takes half an hour to, Dave knows, skeet, you can run through a round pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
That gets me back into timing. All those targets you see on those 7 pegs at a skeet field, you're going to see on a sporting clays course.
Okay.
They're incomers, outgoers, crossers, left and rights. So it's a great tune-up. I use trap for the same reason, and I'll use that for going away targets. With those, though, you have no idea where they're coming out of that trap house. With skeet, they're always coming out of one of those two houses.
Yeah.
Trap, okay. It oscillates, goes back and forth.
Now, with trap, I think it's deceptively hard, because you always think, okay, going straight out and away, this is like the stupid, easy layup shot. It's the 20-yard bow shot of the shotgun.
That's
world,
right.
Where you're like, I should have this all day. And then you get humbled pretty quickly with those, or at least...
Well, it's a mental game.
Okay.
It's a trap is 95%. Once you get to that really good level, It is being able to repeat it over and over. You're talking 400 in a row, Henry.
400 plays in a row?
To be that good, to be in tournament shoot-offs. 400.
Okay.
300 in a row. They don't miss.
Okay.
They're machines, yeah. So don't feel bad about that.
Coming up after the break, let's get into some of the targets. A couple years ago, I picked your brain on a shot I was having a heck of a time hitting. So let's talk a little bit about that and maybe some of these that would cross over and be applicable in the field for people listening. As always, show is brought to you by Hunt & House Archery Center off Longley today. Make sure you go by and check out the new line of Solo Hunter apparel. Thanks for joining us again on Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Outwest Buildings in Fallon. Rick, we're just starting to get into the different shotgun games.
Right.
You had mentioned something to me at one point. I want to get into some of the different targets in sporting clays, which most people are familiar with. But you mentioned, what did you call it? It was something goofy like the king of shotgun games.
That's my favorite. It's called FITASC.
That's
came from France. It's a French game that the Americans and the Europeans still play to this day, and it's extremely popular.
What's the difference between that and sporting clays?
FITASC is a low gun game. So you have to mount the gun to your shoulder from a low position, approximately 9.5 inches from the top of your shoulder down to your pectoral area here. So the gun has to be held lightly against your body. And it has to be held low. You begin every target low. That's a low gun game. They throw more toothy targets. The targets are of distance.
Okay.
They're more of speed. Not every one of them are speedy, but they're of distance, and it tests your true ability.
Okay,
and I love FITASC.
But you don't have to shoot from there, obviously. It's about once it...
Good point,
floats,
Dave. Once you see the target, it's a rule that once you visually locked in on the target... Now you can mount.
Gotcha.
So they can throw something behind your back, and as it comes overhead, you have to be steady. Now you can see it, and now you can mount to your shoulder.
Gotcha.
From a low gun position.
From a low gun position.
So is that, the vests have that line on
them,
right?
Yes, that's right.
I've seen that before. Okay.
All of my vests have that line because I schedule my tournaments around the FITASC event. It's that important to me. I really do.
Oh, wow.
So there's main events of 100 birds, 200 birds for a weekend shoot, for example. But I see, when is FITASC? Are my friends going to be down there? We'll squat up just to shoot the FITASC.
So sporting clays, you can start from a mounted position?
That's right,
the difference?
Henry. That's called a pre-mount. And the NSCA, the National Sporting Clays Association, a few years back said, yes, you may start with the gun pre-mounted to your shoulder, not unlike a skeet shooter.
I always, like when I go with friends, guys I chuck or hunt with, and shoot sporting clays, we always start with the guns low. Not out of any sort of rule set or anything like that, just more out of that hunting mindset of, okay, I got to pick this thing up and then shoot.
Correct. I see so much of that on the sporting clays course. I can always spot the hunters.
Okay.
Because the hunters, yes, sir. They'll stand in the sporting clay stand and they'll have that gun low, often at their hip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh,
often
yeah.
at their hip. And they'll call pull, pull. And that son of a gun is coming up a foot and a half to get to their shoulder.
Yeah.
And a sporting clay's competitor is using the draw length to his advantage. So I can always spot the hunter. I think when we were talking about having me come in today, you said, what are some things you see from a hunter on a sporting clays course?
Right.
That would be number one, is their draw length is so low.
Okay.
They're so used to carrying the gun like I did when I used to hunt doves. The other thing I see with hunters on a sporting clays course, Henry, is their stance is like a rifle shooter. Many rifle shooters will stand with their feet at a right angle to their break point.
Both
feet pointing in the same direction to the left, but their target is out towards the right.
You're not supposed to do that?
You're supposed to stand up a little bit differently when you're shooting a sporting clays target.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like your feet position are not supposed to be parallel. If you're a right-handed shooter, your right foot, for example, would be around 1 o'clock and Yeah, I'm doing this on the floor. 1 o'clock, and your left foot would be around 10:30 or 11. But if you're a left-handed shooter, it's just the opposite. So your right foot would be about 11 o'clock, and your left foot would be around 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Oh.
Yeah, shoulder width apart.
I would be textbook hunter style because I'm like both feet 9 o'clock pointing that way, and then I'm shooting 90 degrees.
Thank you for explaining that in better words because that's what I was trying to say.
Okay.
Dave is exactly the hunter stance that I see on a course.
Yeah. Gotcha. Exactly. Okay, so I will say that might be the only thing I do right with a shotgun. And I think that's so many thousands of hours shooting in the military, doing ready ups where you're squaring your plates to the target, right? Because in that environment, you're practicing to shoot things that are shooting back and you're wearing a plate carrier. Mm-hmm. So if you stand sideways, you get a big opening where bullets like to slip through. Yes. So I do stand squared up, maybe not perfectly, but I might actually do that right.
Yeah.
That's why you limit out, and that's why and that's why I don't.
Yeah, I just
all
square
the time.
Up.
Yeah.
With pistol shooters on a sporting clays course, it's fascinating, Henry. I can pick them out as well. You'll see them do isosceles?
Yeah,
isosceles stance.
Isosceles stance, yeah.
They'll square up to the target break point in the sporting clay stand, and I could tell a pistol shooter every time.
So you guys got the training I learned from Grand Theft Auto.
Upside down
pistol.
And sideways?
Yeah, you know, while I'm running.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
So some of the targets that you notice give hunters fits. What do you see hunters commonly miss on a sporting clays course?
I'd like to say by starting it this way, hunters are really good at courting going away stuff. They're so used to seeing pheasants. Pheasants will jump up and take off in front of you.
Right,
so that's
right.
That's a quartering going away. I see hunters excel at shots that are quail-like shots. They'll come flying in, maybe eye level, a little bit lower than that. Super good. I would never bet money in a competition going up against a hunter on these kinds of presentations.
Okay.
Another shot hunters do really well at is stuff up and over their head, above a 45-degree angle.
Waterfowl stuff.
Waterfowl guys are great
and
at those
And some
shots.
Chucker.
Yeah.
When they're coming off the rocks over your head.
Yeah.
Where I see hunters struggle is with the novelty targets.
Big, what do you mean by that, novelty targets?
A rabbit. A rabbit target is heavier, it's thicker, and it's thrown on the ground, and the ground makes the target look faster than it really is. It's not going that fast, and they're out in front of it most of the time.
Out in front. Okay, that's weird to me because I always think of if I'm missing, I generally think I'm behind.
That's an illusion. The dust cloud that the shot pattern throws up is giving your eyes an illusion that's saying, wow, I'm behind. The actual rabbit target is rolling through the cloud. So you are.
Oh, interesting. Gotcha.
You're not behind.
Okay.
Okay.
So the other target that I see is what's called a chandelle. A chandelle is a.
Oh, like the arcing thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Picture a rainbow in your mind.
Yes.
Goes out in a nice big arc. The hunter guy will get caught inside the arc. So picture where you need your muzzle to be out in front of the target like it's a crosser. I see a lot of hunters struggle with that target because they're caught in what's called inside the lead. They're inside the arc. That's another target that I see. Chandelles give hunters a little bit of grief.
So personal experience, well, gosh, 2 years ago, I think, Rick, I came to you and I said, man, I am so screwed up on these targets. I cannot hit these things. What am I doing wrong? And oddly enough, it was a left to right crosser. Now, I don't think I'm alone in that because I see guys I duck hunt with, guys I chucker hunt with. Those perfect crossers, people tend to struggle with. What would be your tips for a guy like me a couple years ago where I was struggling with that left to right bird?
If I were with you out on the course and you were struggling with that target as a right-hander, I would say, Henry, I want you to just open up a little bit to that target. I want your stance to move towards the left-hand target. So you're a little bit more open, not so as a right-hander, if you move to the right, you're closing off the shot so that you could face that trap a little bit sooner. Then I'd say, Henry, where are you seeing that bird clearly first? And I'd say, all right, put your eyes back towards the trap a little bit, but between the trap and that clearness of the target. So you're between these two points. I want you to just soft focus right in there. I'd say, where do you think it's clear for you to break it? And pick the break point and stick with it. And I'd say, okay, Henry, put your muzzle halfway between that break point and where you see the target clearly. I think once there, when you called pull, I would want you to start the gun moving towards your break point. Don't wait for it. When you see the flash, we call it moving on the flash. So pull, here's the flash. Now I have hard focus when it's clear. Now my whole point is starting to move towards my break point while focusing intently on the front edge of that target.
And you will do that for every target.
Oh, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. I am wiped out after 100 birds because it's constantly thinking. And
like that, every single one?
Every single one.
Oh,
pre-shot and post-shot routine. Absolutely. Yeah. But it's constant thinking about the shot.
That's where the adrenaline's at.
That's right, sir.
Yeah. If I said the four B's to you, would you know what those were?
Yes. From butt to belly, beak, and bang, 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 bang.
Yeah. Butt, body, beak, bang. That's the extent of my shotgun thought process. On that note, let's take a break. When we come back, let's wrap up on maybe some of the gear used in these shotgun games, for lack of a better term. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
All right, and we're back. So we're going to get into a little bit here on tournament timeframes. And say you've got a group of kids that are just learning how to shoot. They've taken some classes, you know, their dad's taught them, mom's taught them, what have you. But now they want to get into trying their first tournament. What would be your suggestion? Mm-hmm. What kind of a tournament or where could they go to get into something like a beginner style?
It would be a fun shoot. From Capital City in Carson City. They throw non-registered fun shoots, and these shoots are to introduce shooters to the game without any pressure, and they throw in a free lunch, and you have a good time with mom and dad on the course. You know, if they hit 2 out of 20, they're happy, and they're having a good time just burning powder.
Yeah.
So you would go to it's called a fun shoot, or in some other cases, a charity shoot. We're shooting this to benefit Mary Smith, who passed away last year.
Oh, nice. And there's just no pressure.
None at all.
That's perfect.
Many of these, they have guns on hand that the shooter can use. If they do not have a gun, they don't want to use dad's gun, which has a length of pull twice what they need because they're little kids.
Oh, yeah.
They don't need 15 inches. They need 13 inches. And so these shoots are the best place to get started. And Capital City does throw a big amount of these kinds of fun. I keep using the word fun with air quotes. Fun shoot, it distinguishes it from an NSCA registered shoot.
Gotcha.
That's a different thing.
And that's that would be all on their website.
Yep. You just go to the website for Capital City and you go to events and the calendar will show you when their next shoot is coming up.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
Another one I want to give a little bit of credit to is Carson Valley Clays. That's a private club. However, they do open their club to fun shoots.
Oh, nice.
Non-registered, let's have a good time. They throw softer targets. They loosen up the springs, so the stuff is just popping off the trap. It really is fun for a young kid of 12, 13 years, even 8 and 9, 10.
Yeah, just people just trying to get into it for the first time,
There you go, Dave.
What about like Walker River? Do they
Walker
do stuff
River,
like that
they
down
sure
there?
Do. Good point, okay, Henry. Yeah. I enjoy that place. Many of the California shooters I shoot with love to come up and shoot Walker because they call it Disneyland for shooters. This guy out there is throwing stuff off of mountaintops. They never see these targets in California.
Okay.
They don't have the room. Yeah. They don't have the elevation. So, yes, they do throw fun shoots as well.
Yeah, I shot there. This was a long time ago. We took the trailer out there for the weekend because they have a great camping facility there. It's a really neat little clubhouse. And it was a charity shoot. It was a charity shoot, so there was no pressure, and That was a blast. Took the whole family out and friends, and we had a great weekend.
If you're looking to find out when these tournaments start, in Nevada, we deal with snow on the ground a lot, so they usually get into full swing in March, April, really.
Yeah.
And Carson City starts getting into it heavily more in the spring. The same with Carson Valley Clays and Walker.
Okay.
These guys are usually March, April. They're getting into it now once a month, twice a month.
And then how long does it go for? I mean, what would your season be? Like, say, if it did start in March or April.
Turkey season. So what I call turkey shoots.
Oh, okay.
November. Now you're shooting for pies and turkey. Oh, really? You're shooting for the real stuff, the food.
Yeah.
I have more pies that I want. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
So Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving.
When you say turkey, I automatically jump to like spring turkey season.
That's exactly what I thought.
Short season.
That's what I thought. I thought, oh, wow, they stop once turkey season starts. But
that's weird.
In Archer, we have a couple shoots as well that are all called turkey shoots. And
yes, sir.
Instead of belt buckles or ribbons or what have you or trophies, they give a
real
turkeys.
Bird? Yeah.
Yeah,
the real turkey,
you know, frozen turkey. And hams and stuff like that. So those are a lot of fun too.
I'll tell you, I got to get out there and check out the Walker River. I've never shot there. Mm-hmm. I get the emails for all the events out there, and I always say, I'll go down and do that, and I never have.
Oh, we should take the trailer.
Worth the drive, right, Dave?
Oh, completely.
Yeah,
100% worth the drive. It's right on the Walker River.
Yeah.
You know, and it is a really neat area too. It's right there outside of Smith.
What's the canyon there?
Wilson Canyon.
Wilson Canyon.
Wilson Canyon. Yeah, we always stop for lunch at Topaz Lodge.
Topaz Lodge, yeah.
Okay.
Delicious.
Okay. Rick, you and I have talked shotguns before.
Yeah.
I have my preferences. Dave and I have done segments on shotguns too on the show, for the hunting side of the house. You shoot and if I mispronounce this, correct me, a Krieghoff?
Krieghoff. Yeah, okay. You were close. Krieghoff, K-80. It's called a K-80, Krieghoff K-80.
Okay,
yeah.
We were talking over the break. Dave mentioned some friends of his that have dropped basically a car payment.
They could have bought the car.
Yeah, on a shotgun. What would be like an entry level? You guys shoot over-unders predominantly, correct?
Predominantly over-unders rule the roost, although do not overlook an automatic, a semi-automatic, especially for a young shooter. The recoil's system mitigates so much of that recoil because the gas is being diverted to push the bolt back and forth.
Yeah.
Young people love semi-automatics. I didn't want to jump ahead of your question, so it was, what would you recommend?
Yeah.
If you're an over-under guy, Browning.
Browning, okay.
Oh, yes. They're affordable. They do last. They're plentiful. You can buy them upstairs at the gun store in Carson City.
Tom's got a pile of them.
Tommy.
Yeah.
He sells Brownings out the door crazy. Beretta is another good entry-level gun for a new shooter. Won't break the bank. So much of the engraving on those $10,000 to $15,000, $20,000 guns is outrageous. The engraving alone.
Oh, yeah.
Gold?
When you say that number out loud, it's like,
terrible.
Holy moly. People pay. Yeah.
Henry, you don't need a $15,000 gun to break targets. You need a gun that's about $2,000. A good one that'll last a young man.
I was going to say good, because my $1,500 Benelli does it.
Yeah, that's what I got, the Benelli Black Eagle.
Yeah. Now, I know that gun, yes.
Yeah, I mean, is something like that, say you've got somebody who can't really afford to have, you know, a $2,000 specific
sporting clay
gun and a chucker gun, what would be a good gun that you could be versatile enough to be doing both with?
I still want to encourage you to look, if you're going just to get started, begin with a semi-automatic.
Semi-auto.
Get a Beretta.
Okay.
Get an A400. They're only $1,700, $1,500.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they have great parts availability here in the United States. Cole Gunsmithing out of Florida is the number one parts guy, the number one seller of Berettas.
Yeah.
But if some father came up to me and said, I like the way you shoot. Should my son get a Krieghoff? No. Put him in a Beretta A300 for $1,700 and call it a day. Or a Benelli. Benelli is an inertia system for recoil, and it does give you a little bit more of a thump So I would still urge the new father to go with the Beretta.
The gas gun.
I do. Gun. I would. I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense. I got Benelli's just seem to have that they work no matter what.
That's what
thing and dragging them around the like sulfur mud out there in Fallon and every, at some point I kind of got it in my head that like, man, I cannot break these things.
No.
This is perfect. Although I will say my dad, ironically enough, is a Beretta guy. That's what he shoots. He likes Berettas.
Mm.
But anyway, so okay. So a semi-automatic, soft shooting gas gun.
Yeah.
That's a good gun to get started and would carry you through realistically those upper mid level tournaments and stuff.
It sure would. And if you're a new shooter who happens to, I keep going back to the child, youth shooter, it'll grow with him because you now can get spacers for the recoil pad and just keep spacing it out another half inch, another half inch. That also goes the other way. You can remove the spacers and now make the length of pull shorter for a young woman, for example, who needs a little less.
I mean, obviously with a youth shooter, you're probably talking about like a 20 gauge.
Many start with a 20.
What
Many
about for do. An adult? I'm assuming that they break it up.
They do have specific events for the gauges.
Okay.
Okay, so the main events in sporting clays is always a 12-gauge event, but they do have a 20-gauge side event where it's only 20 gauges shooting against others, and they also have a 28-gauge and a 410.
Oh, they have a 410 class?
They do have a 410 class, and that's you're only shooting against other guys with a 410, and they do set the course accordingly. So you aren't shooting a 50-yard crosser with 8 pellets.
Right.
They're a little closer.
All right. Hey, thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, and Truck Envy for sponsoring the show today. Remember, if you miss a segment of the show, you can always catch up on them via Apple Podcasts or go to 991fmtalk.com. All past episodes are available there. Thank you again for tuning in. And coming up next, Tom Gresham at 11:00.